Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. A Dream Factory comes to life in all its size and shades Friday through The Last Tycoon, Amazon Studios' new adaptation of the F. Scott Fitzgerald classic set in 1930s Hollywood. Executive producers Billy Ray and Christopher Kaiser join me next live from the Whitby Hotel in New York. Also coming up, our latest classic trivia question of the week, how we came to be, and we celebrate a local news innovator from Washington, D.C., Jim Vance. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. 64 degrees at the top of this hour, and we welcome you on this Monday afternoon to the program All About Television. First of three that we're doing this week. We're happy to have you aboard. Hope everything is great where you are. And we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. Be involved. How? Pick up the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. We have another way to get involved. It's so simple. It's our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage right now, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Just get into the room, put your question or comment in, and it will be addressed. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Before we get to our guest, two news note quickies. Alias Grace, the second series originating from Margaret Atwood novel this year, the first being The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, debuts November 3rd on Netflix. Tyler Gavon heads the title role. And Estrella TV will launch a one-hour nightly comedy in Spanish next month, Las Vegas. Yes, it is a play on the famous city. It comes from Columbia's RCN network in Spanish, and again, that will be happening next month on Estrella TV, on television stations across the country. And that's news notes for today. This seems to be a big year for Amazon Studios to be involved in one way or another with the wonderful author F. Scott Fitzgerald, one of the great authors of the 20th century, for such projects as The Great Gatsby and The Last Tycoon, which was his final novel. Earlier this year, Amazon premiered Z, The Beginning of Everything, based on one of Fitzgerald's most well-known characters, with Christina Ricci giving a wonderful performance in the main role of Z or Zelda. Now, The Last Tycoon, the last novel that Fitzgerald ever wrote, and was once Eli Kazan's last movie as a director, is now coming into TV series form starting this Friday on Amazon. It's a show based on the world of 1930s Hollywood, and it's somewhat based on one of the great moguls of that time from MGM, the late, great Irving Thalberg, who many people called the Boy Wonder. As we speak, the cast and crew of The Last Tycoon are huddling with press at the Whitby Hotel in Midtown Manhattan, and that's where we find our two guests of the day. Joining us live from the hotel in New York, the two key executive producers. First up, an Oscar nominee for his work on the wonderful Tom Hanks movie, Captain Phillips, also worked on the Hunger Games franchise, Billy Ray. Billy, welcome in.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Same here. And joining you and me is one of the other key executive producers. He has a lot of TV in his background, including such shows as Tyrant and Party of Five, Christopher Kaiser. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you? It's good to be here.
Very, very well, thank you. And Billy, we'll start with you. What fascinated both you and Chris about doing a TV series based on the work of Fitzgerald?
Well, I read the book, which Fitzgerald didn't get to finish. He died halfway through, actually, in 1940. And I recognized that the conversations that he was writing about in 1930s Hollywood were conversations that I was having in my career, that the essential power dynamic in Hollywood had never changed in 80 years. And so I thought this as a series would be an opportunity to talk about the Hollywood of today by telling the story through the characters of the Hollywood of the 1930s. I also was completely attracted to the lead character of Monroe Starr, who is this guy trying to make this one perfect piece of art because he believes he's going to die young and he wants to leave a legacy behind. And the struggles that he encounters in trying to create that perfect piece of art because he's working in a system that is devised to make that impossible. I just found all of that to be pretty irresistible. I loved all the characters. I loved the tone of the book. And I just knew that it was a world that would spin endless possibilities.
Chris, what fascinated you about that world? A lot of people consider that time, especially the time that Irving Thalberg ran MGM, as well as other studio moguls, both young and old at the time. Some people who are historians of the period called it the Dream Factory era. Why do you think that was the case?
Well, it's interesting that that's, you both asked that question and then used that phrase, because it would tie intimately to why I actually find this story fascinating. The first is, I'll give you two answers. The first is, in the 1930s in Hollywood really was a kind of a dream factory. First of all, it was the place in which the American myth was spread both across this country and around the world. Remember, things were darker than at any other period in recent memory. The Depression sweeping across the country and the upheaval in Europe, things were very, very bad at that point. Americans went to the movies in droves, in part because they were told stories by Hollywood about what this country was or could be. The American myth, the idea of American exceptionalism, the idea that a person could be born one thing and rise to become something else on the basis of his or her hard work, mostly his at that point, let's be honest, and some natural talent. All of that started in Hollywood at that point. And Billy and I were really interested in that story that Hollywood told America. It's a sort of a lie, but it's a lie that is both really necessary and has a cost. And for us, the question of what the pull of that myth was and what the costs of telling those stories were, those are really interesting to us. And they're interesting to us now in 2017, when the idea of American exceptionalism and the concept of the American dream has taken a hit. Both of those have. The question really is, do we have room for some kind of national myth? Who's going to tell that? And is it, in the long run, advantageous or not? All of that stuff really has been really intimately with Fitzgerald's interest, because the need for the cost of the American dream is the heart of the Tycoon and Gatsby and so much else of what he wrote.
Billy, the lead character, Monroe Starr, is for many based on Irving Thalberg. And for those who don't know who he was considered the boy wonder, the genius at MGM who could do any kind of movie, musical, comedy, drama, and make it magical. For example, and he also was a big believer that you should test films out one way or another. He did that with the Marx Brothers, particularly with A Night at the Opera, where he would have the Marx Brothers go on stage around the country, and they would test comedy bits that would be in that movie. And what worked with public pretty much stayed in. What didn't work stayed out. He liked the idea of sort of really trying to keep working on a project one way or another until he found, like, the magic formula to make it work. How does Monroe, the lead character, sort of exemplify Thalberg, both his fine points and his warts?
Well, there's a drivenness to Monroe Starr, which is part of what makes him so compelling. You know, Irving Thalberg was a studio head by the time he was 20, which is just extraordinary. Monroe Starr was as well. Irving Thalberg invented the reshoot. Irving Thalberg was the person who believed that it was perfectly admissible and acceptable to have 10 writers on a movie. In our show, Monroe says often, the movie is the baby, and we must always protect the baby. And what he means by that is someone's feelings, if they get stepped on along the way, that just is part of the cost of doing business. Anything that serves to make the movie better is what we have to do. And that is very much a Thalberg ideal. And Monroe Starr, part of what interests us about him is that he's so unapologetic in his pursuit of perfection that he may blow through a bunch of writers. He may fire a director in the middle of a scene. He may get rid of an actor and reshoot an entire movie just to get a performance right. And there's no apology for any of it, because the movie is the baby. And Starr believes that what he ultimately must answer for is the quality of the movie. I think that makes him a very dangerous person to be around, but I think that makes him an entirely compelling character to watch.
Christopher mentioned Z, the other Amazon series that has its roots in Fitzgerald's writing. Did you see Z before you started production on Tycoon? And whether you did or not, did you want the same kind of flavor as Z, or did you want the way it looked, the cinematic look of this to be totally different?
We actually, I haven't watched Z, and we didn't develop this in any way in relation to what Z was doing. That is not disrespect to them at all. Both Billy and I actually felt that the safest way to make a story, to do a story like this, is not to worry about or be constrained by what other people were doing. In other words, you don't want to watch something and say, "Oh my goodness, now I can't do it that way because they've done it. That's copying." But by the way, that extends not just to Z. There's a movie of The Last Tycoon made in the 1970s by Elie Kazan, starring Robert De Niro, and neither one of us has watched that either. It's entirely for the same reason, that in some sense you're free to do what you want because of that. Now, having said that, Amazon knows Z very well, and if they say, "Hey, that other show did this, you know, touched on this or that," I don't think it's very likely. By the way, Z is really about the very early years of Zelda and Scott Fitzgerald, Zelda with his wife. So it's set in a different time, is concerned with different things than we are. But I guess it's not an impossibility that there could be some overlap. We'll let the studio tell us that. Otherwise, we're on our own path, and we're making the show that you know, we're inspired to make without constraints. So no real overlap there.
Billy Ray and Christopher Kaiser are the key executive producers of The Last Tycoon, its latest original drama series from Amazon Studios, and it premieres on smart TV sets and devices this Friday. They are both with us live this half-hour from the Whitby Hotel in Midtown Manhattan, and an interview exclusive on tomorrow will be televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York on the phone to All About Television, about to mark a decade on the air 2 weeks from now. And if you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a call. Here's the number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. A very popular independent filmmaker will join us on Wednesday. Her work is premiering on Fuse this weekend. It's called Indivisible. It's about several undocumented immigrants and what they're going through. The filmmaker is Hillary Lindler, and she'll be with us live this Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow We Televise. And once again, 2 weeks from today, we mark 10 years on the air. We launch our second decade, and boy, we've got a pair of great guests to launch it with. First up, the former head of Belmont Television. She put together Narcos and Hemlock Grove for Netflix and Hannibal for NBC, Katie O'Connell Marsh. She is now the chief executive of the brand new company, Platform One Media, and they have a very big scripted agenda coming their way, and your way too. And then, the very first guest that we had on Blog Talk Radio when we made the move here more than 8 years ago, back in May of 2009, one of the most acclaimed people in all of television programming, the head of FX, John Landgraf, whose network has just received more than 50 Emmy nominations. John Landgraf, FX, Katie O'Connell Marsh from Platform One Media, formerly of Belmont, my two key guests coming your way 2 weeks from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Billy, how does the plot go with this last Tycoon adaptation? What did you decide to do that pretty much parallels the novel, and then where do you jump off?
Well, remember, he died halfway through writing the novel and left some notes behind for where he thought the second half of the novel would go, which I'm not actually sure he would have executed, because I don't think there's anything in his notes that was actually supported by the first half that he had already written. We had basically exhausted boundaries of the novel by the time we were done with the pilot. And with the exception of a few scenes and a few lines, everything after the pilot is really an exploration on our part of our own interpretation of where we thought the material could go.
Mm-hmm. Chris, somebody who I had on this program Friday and was on BK Live, a local show here early this afternoon, saw that pilot, loved it. And when I mentioned that we were going to have both of you on, was like, thrilled, because she really loved the characters. She loved the way the pilot went, the flavor of it, and really, to her, had a very nice depiction of where Hollywood was at that time. How did you set up that depiction? How did you set up the look? How did you set up the characters? What were some of, like, the key things you and Billy were looking for?
Well, that's a big, good, complicated question. First of all, the look really meant that we hired wonderful people. So we have Patricia von Brandenstein, who is our production designer. She won an Academy Award for Amadeus. Janie Bryant, who won an Emmy for Mad Men, who's also remarkable, is our costume designer. Danny Motor is our DP, and anyone who's seen the show knows exactly how talented he is. So we began with that, Trish Gallagher, Glenda, props. And they, in conjunction with me and with Billy and with Pepelina Hutupis and Scott Hornbacher, our other producers, really were insistent on the idea that the show should be, as Billy often says, a fair visual representation of the impossible, enticing, magical world that the 1930s movies were, the 1930s were in the movies. We want people to feel why that dream was irresistible. We had to put something irresistible on screen. And we did that beginning with all of that production. Then you have to cast it properly, and that means some remarkable actors, and we can talk about them individually if you want, but in addition to everything else they brought to the show, Matt and Kelsey and Lily and Rosemary and Dominique, they felt entirely both modern and as if they were, you know, of the time. And that's not universally true, as you know. Not everyone can play in a period piece. So all of those things mattered a lot to us. I mean, it can go on from there. We can talk about the plot and the way in which the scripts were written. But begin with, those are the pieces, and most of it, to be honest with you, just has to do with hiring really extraordinary people who are fully committed to the truthfulness of that they're responsible for.
Well, Bill, let's talk about the key trio behind this. Let's start with Matt Bonner. A lot of you remember him from White Collar. He plays the main character. What about him appealed to both you and Chris about bringing him the title role?
Well, Matt Bomer was the only actor that we talked about for that part. This had never happened in my career before, where every actor that we went after, everyone who was our first choice, said yes. That was a first in my career. What we wanted from Monroe Starr was a certain inscrutability, where it would be difficult to read him when you first meet him, but that there was something so compelling happening behind those eyes that as he walked past you, you found yourself wondering, what is that guy thinking about? That he looks like he's always planning something. We wanted someone who would be irresistibly attractive to both men and women. Matt certainly gives you that. You wanted someone who looked like he could be both entirely cold and calculating and yet unbelievably seductive and charming, sometimes in the same moment. Matt gives you all of that. Then you look at Kelsey Grammer for Pat Brady. You get that great physicality that Kelsey provides. You know, obviously, they're both wonderful actors. Kelsey can be very physically imposing, and yet at the same time, there's a twinkle in his eye. He plays comedy beautifully. When you see the show, you can see that even when he's at his most upset with Monroe, you can still tell that he loves him, that there's a very paternal feeling that he has for him and a deep gratitude that he has for him. You know, those are two very special actors at the top. The only person that we ever offered the part of Celia to was Lily Collins, who is completely exploding, as we believed and hoped that she would. We never went to anyone but Dominique McGilligott to play Kathleen. We never went to anybody but Rosemary DeWitt to play Rose. They all said yes. And that gave our casting process a certain amount of momentum that never stopped. All of a sudden, you look up and you can go after someone like Jennifer Beals to do a three-episode part during the season because they can sort of see the level of talent that they're going to be working with in terms of the rest of the cast. And it just had a knock-on effect that continued all the way through the year.
Mm-hmm. Billy, this is your first major project for television. Christopher, your fellow executive producer, has had quite a bit of experience with different types of dramas, Party of Five, a family drama, Tyrant, a contemporary drama set in a far-off location. What was it like for you, Billy, to adapt from the kind of feature films you do, like Captain Phillips or The Hunger Games, to do something that is cinematic in its own way, but also is distinctly television, that distinctly allows you to shape a story in a more expanded length? And you not only came in as executive producer, you also wrote and directed some episodes, too.
Well, it's been bliss. It's been the most fun I've ever had. You know, screenplays have been very, very good to me for a lengthy career now. But there's something about the forced economy of 110 pages versus the ability to arc a character over five seasons You know, when I was first putting the Bible for the show together, before Chris was even aboard, I found that I would go into my office at 8 in the morning and I would look up, it would be 6 in the afternoon, and I wouldn't know where the day had gone. It was just so much fun to be playing in this particular sandbox. Turns out that Chris and I both have a lot to say about Hollywood and America and the immigrant experience and the necessity of movies and the deceit of movies and love and loss and romance. These are all things that compel us. We've been writing about these things peripherally our entire careers, and now we have this vehicle where we can talk about them in a very direct way. That was very, very compelling for both of us.
Chris, when you have someone like Billy accomplish as he is coming into television in a major way for the first time, and you have the television experience, how do you develop the relationship where Billy learns the ropes of writing and directing in a medium that's different, and yet able to give him enough room to flourish? Do you, like, try to go as much as possible, I say, hey, Billy, try this, try that, you know, to maybe help expedite the process? Or do you pretty much, you know, is it more of a trust game? Like, I trust this person because he's done so well in this medium, he'll do great with this.
I think mostly it's just letting everyone know who's boss, to be honest. So. All right. First of all, Billy and I have known each other for a long time, and that helped. We knew each other before we ever worked together in television because we both served on the board of the Writers Guild of America West, and so we had a really good relationship beforehand. Television is intensely collaborative, as you know, and that all that was necessary is that Billy, though he came from features, was interested in that collaboration. And then, by the way, it wasn't just me. It was, we had a room of writers. We were all together working on all of this stuff. And even though, you know, he had started in a world in which you tell one story for, you know, for 120 pages, as he said, it wasn't that difficult to begin, because he's also a fan of and a student of television, to begin to expand that to 9 episodes. So I don't think we found that particularly difficult. I've always worked with a partner. I had, you know, Amy Lippman and I were partners for decades, and you get a language between the two of you where some stuff together and some stuff you separately. Billy obviously directed a bunch of the episodes, and that was great. By the way, I learned a lot by being on the set with somebody who was both my partner and a director, which hadn't happened before. But I don't actually think of this as being, it was a deliberate process that did not have particular bumps along the way. The truth is the common problems were the problems of making the show, and we just solved those side by side. And the fact, by the way, that we had different skill sets we came into this with and slightly different perspectives, I think is a good thing, you know? Partnerships like that work for a really good reason. And this was an easy one.
You know, the thing about it from a writing perspective is, if you've been a screenwriter for as many years as I have, you have survived because you know how to take notes. You know how to rewrite. Otherwise, you just don't last in the screenwriting business. So I was very, very comfortable with the idea of getting notes and getting input on the pilot or on subsequent drafts that I happen to be the lead writer on. What you really have to learn how to do when you're a screenwriter is tell the difference between good notes and bad notes. You have to learn how to diagnose the material that's coming your way. And I've gotten a fair amount of both throughout my career. What was unique about my relationship with Chris was that he never gave me a bad note. He never gave me an idea that makes sense. And if he found something in one of my drafts that was lacking, it wasn't his imagination. It was that thing was actually lacking. I had failed to articulate it in the best way possible. I wasn't expressing an idea clearly, or I was leaving something out. And my trust of his taste was 100%. It was just absolute. And that makes the rewriting process very easy. It makes it seamless.
It's also a two-way street. You know, I wrote scripts and Billy gave me notes. We divided up post and took the lead on different episodes and then gave each other notes. So this was all, it was entirely collaborative from the beginning. And I don't think we approached it like you have a certain skill to come out of features, you have a certain skill to come out of television. You do some stuff, I'll do some stuff. didn't need to do that.
Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, is in our chat room. Simon Apple 04 my name. So if you want to get in on the action with a few more minutes left with our guests, put it in the chat room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Billy, was there a theme that Fitzgerald wanted to explore deeply in this novel that he couldn't finish because of his death that you and Christopher and everyone involved in this production are able to?
I wouldn't call it a theme because I feel like the themes were very clear. What I will say is that in the first half of the novel, he spends very little time talking about the relationship between Monroe Starr and Pat Brady. Brady's given almost no real estate the first half of the novel. And yet, in the notes that Fitzgerald left behind, the Brady-Starr relationship was going to turn into an actual Brady-Starr war. And that was something I think he was determined to explore, and I believe he would have gone back and rewritten the first half of the novel to service that, to support it more fully. That was something we were able to do that Fitzgerald could not have.
Matt Bonner, Kelsey Grammer, Lily Collins, co-star in Amazon Studios' new series adaptation of the classic F. Scott Fitzgerald tale of 1930s Hollywood, The Last Tycoon. It premieres this Friday wherever Amazon Studios and their programs available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices like Amazon Fire TV, Roku, Chromecast, Apple TV, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, Amazon.com/originals. That's Amazon.com/originals. The Last Tycoon premieres this Friday. And don't forget, you can also catch the other Fitzgerald-inspired series, Z, the Beginning of Everything, starring Christina Ricci, that is still available on Amazon Studios, and there will be a second season of the series next year. Billy Ray and Christopher Kaiser, executive producers of The Last Tycoon, joining us live from the Whitby Hotel in Midtown Manhattan. Thank you both again for taking the time. Congratulations on, with you and everybody on making this, and I look forward to a wonderful long run with this program.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Billy Ray and Christopher Kaiser from The Last Tycoon joining us live from the Whitby Hotel in Midtown Manhattan this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. More on the program, including our classic trivia question of the week. We have a very interesting prize in store for you, so stick around. You might win it if you're first with the correct answer. But first, some thoughts from the fine people at Audible.com, an Amazon company. One of their new titles is also an instant bestseller. It's The X-Files, yes, based on the classic television series and narrated by co-star himself, David DeConvey. And you can get it right now if you go for a 30-day trial with Audible.com. It's one reason why it is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information with over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. All you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You can get one free book like The X-Files or one of your choice and 1 month trial of service. And don't forget, because it's owned by Amazon.com, Audible has great customer service 24/7. So give the world of sound a try and find out how it can transform the way you hear the world. audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You are checking out Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. We are on the program all about the world of the tube. 2 weeks from today, we mark our 10th year on the air, and we begin our second decade. We're on Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. This week, next week, and the following week, our anniversary week, 3 episodes for you each week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And coming up in our next Wednesday episode, we will have the filmmaker behind the new Fuse documentary, Indivisible, about a set of undocumented immigrants and what they're dealing with. Producer director Hillary Lindner will join us. And joining us on Friday episode, among other people, we'll have a stand-up comedian I know who somehow gets herself into television every now and then in some of the most unique places around. I'm talking about my good friend Helene Witt, and she'll be on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Once again, 2 weeks from today, our special 90-minute 10th anniversary edition with FX Network President John Landgraf and the new head of Platform One Media, Chief Executive Katie O'Connell Marsh, formerly the head of Gaumont Television. We also hope to have a key member of the New York Television Festival. That was the first subject that we came on the air with on our very first episode, the first Monday of August, 2007. 90-minute edition, 2 weeks from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Coming up our next half hour, we'll tell you how we came to be. I think you'll like the origin tale. Plus, our classic trivia question of the week. And if you are first with the correct answer, you'll win the probably the most unique prize we have offered so far. Plus, we'll have some thoughts about a wonderful newscaster in Washington, D.C., who passed away yesterday, the brilliant commentator and anchorman, Jim Vance. And we'll also update you on our guests from Friday and where they are at right now. We'll get to all of that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Hip Hop Roundtable. Check out the table tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you can always find the best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow We Televise for this Monday in July. Simon Appleband with you live from New Weber, York, where it is, believe it or not, 64 degrees here at the top of the hour. Would you believe that just 48 hours ago, we were in the thick of a heat wave with temperatures coming to 95 degrees and humidity making it feel like more near 100? Well, it's now 64 degrees thanks to a cooling of the temperatures over the last 24 hours and a big rain overnight and early today. But we got through it, and we are in good shape to go. Coming up this half hour, at long last, you hear the origin of How We Came to Be, plus a remembrance of Jim Vance, the wonderful WRC-TV Washington, D.C. anchor and commentator who passed away yesterday at the age of 75. And we'll update you in our up section about our guests from Friday. But right now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. And this week, we're going for our second straight winner in a row, and we have a very unique prize, probably the most unique prize we have ever offered in the two-plus years we've been doing this. It's a set of Disney Junior Magnets. They're very colorful, great for kids, great for families. You can place them all over the place, and they can be yours if you know the answer to this classic trivia question. Here we go. Name the 1960s comedy series starring Gene Kelly. Name the 1960s comedy series starring Gene Kelly. It was on ABC, I believe it was 1962 to 1963, and it was based on a famous movie that he did not star in. Name the 1960s comedy series starring Gene Kelly. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please be sure to enclose your name and where you're from, full mailing address, and if you're first with the correct answer before Friday afternoon, you will win this wonderful set of magnets provided by Disney Junior. And if you just missed the question, no problem. I'll post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and my Twitter handle. That's at UBC Simon TWBT, at UBC Simon TWBT. And we will repeat the question during Wednesday's episode. So tune in and see if we don't have a winner by then, if you can make it out. All right? So, again, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Enclose your full name, your full mailing address. And remember, in order to win, be in. And all the very best. 2 weeks from today, we will mark something very special. 10 years of being the program All About Television, and we'll be kicking off our second decade. And it hit me over the weekend that in all this time, we've never told you how we came on the air. You might say, like a famous comic book character like Superman or Batman or Wonder Woman, the origin. But I thought, given that we had the time, and we only had guests for the first half of the show, that I could take a little bit of time and share with all of you how this program came to be and what did happen as a result. I've been covering television for nearly 37 years. A lot of it has been covering through the trade press, that is, journals, publications, magazines, that are for people in the trade of television, mostly in the world of cable television. Cablevision Magazine, Cable Facts Daily, Cable World, Electronic Media, for a while Channels, Late Limited Magazine formed by the brilliant Les Brown, and Cable Marketing, among other publications. And in the few years before 2007, I would often have what I call an in-out conversation about what else could I do. In-out meaning that I would think aloud about, hey, there's something I'd love to do, and then it would go out the door or out my ear because I would be stopped by the thought of, nah, can't do it, don't have the money, don't have the time, don't have the resources, don't have this, don't have that. You know, I have a lot of don'ts pop up here. And I'll be in and out because I would think about this every so often. And the conversation in play was this. I would watch programs like Entertainment Tonight, The Insider, Extra, Access Hollywood, and a network like E! Entertainment Television regularly. And when I would, when the subject was a television program or a television network, guess who would be interviewed? Guess who would pop up on camera? The star of the series. Never the executive producer, never the writer, never the director, never the show creator. Just the star. And that's fine. I understand that. I understand that programs like that, networks like that, is somewhat star-driven. But what if there was an opportunity for these show creators and producers and directors and other people behind the scenes to go public, to have a space, a platform, an environment, a way to be known to you? And again, every time I would think about how I would do it, radio, television, make it like 60 minutes in format, or Larry King Live, or a one-on-one interview show, it would be a stopper coming up, like Scrabble, a stopper. No time, no resources, no money beyond what I've made for a living at the time. And that kept being the case until early 2007. And it started to stop being the case when I was having an assisting agreement at Landmark. I've shared about Landmark before. Landmark is the empowerment transformational education organization behind the Landmark Forum, which incidentally more than 170 people did this past weekend here in the Big Apple. And congratulations to all of them, giving themselves the opportunity to transform the quality of their lives. I was assisting at Landmark on a weekend agreement, and we had some downtime between times when the participants were doing their thing. And this person sitting with me and I shared about what we were up to. And all of a sudden I blurted out this idea of doing my own show about the world of television, as I just showcased with you. And the person assisting with me said, "Simon, got an idea for you. The next time you have that conversation, you have this idea popping out of your head, don't be so quick to pop it back in your head and go out the ear. Stay around for a while. Have it settle. Don't be so fast to let it go. See what happens." And I decided to take advantage of that thought. I didn't realize it was coaching at the time. It was. And I said, "Okay, I'll do that. I'll do that. Thank you. Thank you for offering that." A few weeks later, I got a call at work. I was working at Trade Magazine at the time. And I got a call from a publicist friend in Los Angeles who was working on a website called NowLive.com. NowLive was a website in part formed by Adrienne Curry, at the time she was married to Christopher Knight, Chris the Beatty Bunch. And it was a website offering live radio and video programming from Los Angeles. And the chief executive of that service was going to be in town, and the publicist wondered, would I meet him? And at first, my thinking was, well, this person is with the internet. I cover television. It's not necessarily a fit. Is it really going to be worth it? But I then thought, okay, this publicist, who I knew very well, and I'd worked on some projects for stories, I had a hunch that this person wouldn't steer me wrong. It was a hunch. And I said, okay, I'll meet. So, sometime later, we met at the Paramount Hotel across the street from the Richard Rogers Theater near Times Square. And as this chief executive was showcasing what this channel, this service was all about, a very interesting thing happened inside my brain. Another part of my brain, not the part of my brain that was responsible for the conversation going in and out, but another part of my brain, my self part, was starting to shout because I was just listening. And the shout was along the line of, Simon, tell this person about what you want to do. And the chief executive went on and on and on. Simon, tell this person about what you want to do. On and on and on and on and on and on and on. And then all of a sudden, a really big shout inside my head. They couldn't hear it. I certainly could. Simon, tell this person what you want to do. And I interrupted them. You know, there's this program I have been thinking about for quite a while. And I explained what I wanted to do. And the executive said, okay, let's see what we can do. Email me a proposal, and we'll go from there. And I emailed the proposal less than 24 hours. Got back to, when I got back home, got on my computer, got the proposal, emailed it pronto. And a few weeks later, the show was set up. And the first week of August, 2007, this very program, Tomorrow Be Televised, went on the air. Half hour, scheduled for every 2 weeks on nowlive.com. I only had one guest lined up, and I had no clue who was going to listen, how many people were going to listen, where we're going to be on the air 2 weeks from now. Because I only had one guest lined up, and that was Ned Canty at the time, one of the key people behind the New York Television Festival. Went on the air, was able in a couple of days to get my second guest on. And things went from there. A few months after we were on the air, we went from being a half hour every other week to a half hour every week. In January of 2008, we went from being a half hour every week to an hour every week. And then January of 2009, we became a twice-weekly show, Monday, Friday, 3 o'clock Eastern Time, noon Pacific. And in late April of 2009, Now Live gave us the word, sort of a roundabout way, that they were going off the air. No more. And we had a scramble to get a new person, to get a new organization aboard and get back on the air. Luckily, I had heard of Blog Talk Radio. I'd actually gone to an event here in New York where Alan Levy, the head of Blog Talk, was. Got in contact with them. We did miss a week. And then in May of 2009, Tomorrow Be Televised returned to the air on this very, very website. And we haven't been off since. John Weingraff, the head of FX, and Peter Tolan, the co-creator with Dennis Leary of Rescue Me, were our first guests. And these last 10 years have been an incredible journey. It's been the most fruitful enterprise of my life. We have done, I'm guessing because we do about 100 shows every year, we've done between 900 and 1,000 episodes. We've had the best and the brightest people in television, over 800 guests, incredible people, series producers, executive producers, series creators, network executives, entrepreneurs launching ventures, people behind smart TV apps and devices, and very iconic people like Norman Lear, like Bill Persky, one of the great situation comedy writers of all time. Like James Drury, the star of The Virginian. Like a former star at Motown. And they have been some of the most wonderful moments I've had covering this world of television. And what's very important to note is that all of that, this last decade, would not have happened at all if it had not been for the person you are hearing, letting go of a conversation, of an idea, of a pathway to life that was going in and out and in and out and in and out and was done its way forever, had it not been for somebody else who saw what I could do at Landmark and gave me the opportunity to pursue something I wanted to pursue for a long time. And I will always be grateful to Landmark for being very responsible for this program being on the air. And that's why when I come to Landmark, I'm very clear that anything that I'm out to cost myself my life is available out of what I do at Landmark, how I sit there, and more importantly, the wonderful people I meet there, many of whom are up to incredible things, not just in their own lives, but for the lives of others and for the world at large. And I'm very grateful to that person who assisted with me that day for pounding in my head to open my mouth and make something go. And I thank all of you, now that you know, as Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story, I thank all of you for your listening over these last 10 years. And I have a hunch the second decade, it's going to be even greater. And we'll have more to say about where we want the second decade to go. And I hope to have a major announcement for you about a very special part, new part of this, in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned. And thank you for allowing me to use some of my time to finally get how we came to be out in front to all of you. In a moment, a quick up on some of our guests on Friday and what they're up to. But first, over the weekend, we got the news that somebody who I used to see a lot in Washington, D.C., when I was a student at American University, passed away. His name is Jim Vance. And Jim was probably the longest-running anchor person in that city. When my time was at American University, he was paired with Glenn Rinker on the 6 and 11 p.m. local newscast on WRC NBC's Washington, D.C. affiliate in the nation's capital. He was one of the first people of color to anchor a major local newscast. And he probably was the first person of color not only to anchor a newscast, but to have commentary on a regular basis. And when Jim Vance delivered commentary, it was as straight, it was as conversational, and it was as from the gut as you could ever find. In fact, some of his commentaries were about what Vance himself was dealing with, bouts of depression, bouts of anxiety, concern about the state of D.C., concern about the state of races and the state of society. And he could let it rip like nobody else. And no matter who he worked with, Vance was a team player. He was a marvelous writer. He knew Washington, D.C. inside and outside, and that's probably why he spent more than 45 years in front of a camera covering that city. Earlier this year, he announced to his television viewers that he had cancer, and he pledged at the time that he was going to beat it. And for a while he did, until this past weekend. Vance lived a wonderful 75 years, mostly in D.C., and mostly in front of a very grateful public at various television stations in D.C., but mostly at WRC and D.C.'s affiliate. And there are a lot of people today who are remembering him for being a part of their lives, and for delivering the news in a fair and straight and sometimes courageous way, and for always letting the public know what was going on in his life, and by doing so, inspiring others to go through some of the things that he did and ultimately to get through them. I'm certain that there are a lot of AU graduates my age or below who will always treasure the opportunity to see Jim Vance in action. I certainly do. And I send my condolences to all of his television colleagues as well as his family. I am sure that YouTube will have a lot of examples of his wonderful work and his commentary. And here's my hope, that there will be so many people inspired by Jim Vance over the years that he was the best. Not just one of the best local anchor people in Washington, D.C., but the best, one of the best anywhere in this nation. That there will be more Jim Vances, more anchor people willing to give the important news of their area in a fair and solid way, and to deliver commentary that is informed and straight and makes the difference. Before we leave you, let's give you up as an update, where we update some of the guests and topics on this story. We had an amazing 90-minute episode Friday with some terrific people. First up, we had Wendy Zappit, the executive producer of Descendants 2, a program that ran at 8 p.m. last Friday on a 6 network simulcast on local ABC stations, on Disney Channel, Disney XD, Freeform, Lifetime, and Lifetime Movie Network. The result, more than 13 million viewers caught Descendants 2 through that simulcast, more than 5.3 million alone on Disney Channel. I'm sure that Disney Channel will replay Descendants 2 a number of times before the end of this month, and certainly in August. Congratulations to Wendy and everybody involved for making Descendants 2 happen. Secondly, we had the playwright and a co-producer, co-star behind a play happening here in New York next month called TV in My Bones, where TV and an influence in people's lives is showcased. We had C.S. Hansen, the playwright, and Phoebe Marr, co-star and producer, who I've known, by the way, from other ways here in New York. We talked about the Kickstarter campaign that the play is involved with to try to raise $8,000 with a month to go. We checked out at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and as of nearly 2 hours ago, $5,000 has been raised, $3,000 to go. So right now they're coming up on the two-third mark, and they still have less than a month to go in that campaign. By the way, if you would like to make a contribution to that campaign, and we've heard from people who would like to, here's where you go, www.indiegogo.com/projects. That's www.indiegogo.com/projects. Once again, TV in My Bones will premiere August 10th at the Theater for the New City in Manhattan. And finally, we had the marvelous Victoria Rowell, Emmy Award nominee, NAACP Image Award winner, who now is doing The Rich and the Ruthless. That program is premiering this Friday on the Urban Movie Channel, and just like The Last Tycoon, it's available on smart TV sets and smart devices. And in case you missed that interview with Rowell, she told us that The Rich and the Ruthless has already been picked up for a second season, and she'll be doing more through her original production company with Urban Movie Channel. If you missed out on that 90-minute episode, which was absolutely magical, and I'm not kidding, was absolutely magical, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Also, check out the podcast version on iTunes, as well as going to Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, well, you can order it online or go to an Apple store near you. Again, a big thank you to our wonderful guests from The Last Tycoon, Amazon Studios, Billy Ray and Christopher Kaiser. Thanks for making the time from the Whitby Hotel in Midtown Manhattan over on East 56th Street. By the way, Amazon is also having the cast and crew of The Tick. That's the new live-action version of the famous comic character that's also taking place with press here in New York as we speak. And we hope to have the creator and executive producer of that series, the creator of The Tick himself, Ben Edlund, with us along with some of the other executive producers. So two shows are being showcased today at the Whitby, and we hope to have The Tick on sometime in August, and we will keep you posted. So again, thanks to Billy and Christopher for joining us today. And thanks to all of you, of course, for listening. Remember, we're doing 3 episodes of Tomorrow Be Televised this week, next week, and our anniversary week 2 weeks from now. Coming up on Wednesday's program at our regular time, 3 to meet the New Pacific, we will have Hillary Linder, the producer-director of the new Fuse documentary, Indivisible, the special run this weekend. And coming up on Friday's episode, we'll have stand-up comedian Helene Webb, who I know from Landmark, by the way. And she has been having some very interesting adventures in the TV world here and there, and she'll talk to us all about it. And once again, 2 weeks from today, our special 10th anniversary episode with FX Network President John Landgraf and Platform One Media new chief executive Katie O'Connell Marsh. If you came in late on today's episode or want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Remember, all of our episodes are also in podcast form at iTunes.com and on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. We're up there along with other Blog Talk Radio shows, and they're both available 24/7. That's the Apple TV iTunes podcast app. Remember, if you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. We love hearing from you. What do you think about our guest today? And what's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going as we get ready to mark 10 years of this program being on the air? love to hear from you, and I do respond to your emails. So go ahead, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Remember, you can also use that to get involved with our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. If you're first with the correct answer this week, our very unique prize, Disney Junior Magnets. They're really wonderful, and I think you will enjoy them, putting them anywhere in your house, sharing them with your kids or other members of the family. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter. The Twitter handle at UVC Simon TWVT. That's UVC Simon TWVT. Again, I do respond in 24 hours to your emails or your social media questions and comments. We love hearing from you because, as always, what you say matters. And while I have a moment, if you like our program, get involved. Tell a friend. Let them know. Tune in live. And use our chat room. Use our phone number. We love it when our program is interactive because we know you are out there. So remember our phone number. It's 646-652-2906. To get involved, if you're not listening at the time, you're somewhere else, you can still call into the program if you know we're on. And again, you can use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Remember, no matter how you communicate, it's appreciated because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of this very enterprise are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow's Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. Get a free audiobook and a one-month trial of service at audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow's Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day. We are back less than 48 hours from now, Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Please be safe and be great out there no matter what the weather. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.